morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. We're going to talk about that anti-protest bill. The governor calls it the anti-riot bill. It's working its way forward in Tallahassee and could become a big issue next week. We're going to talk about that in just a moment and take your phone calls, too. So stick around. First up, four listener comments about yesterday's program. Yesterday, we talked to a COVID-19 long hauler, somebody who's suffered the effects of his COVID infection for 11 of the last 12 months. And after the program yesterday, here's what four listeners quickly had to say.
Hello, this is Ralph Hanson. I'm calling about the program on COVID. It was very good, excellent, and I just wanted to say I also had a very good experience at the racetrack in Tampa. It was very well organized. Didn't take even an hour. It was very good. That's all I wanted to say, really. I encourage everyone to get their vaccination as soon as possible.
I am commenting on today's show about the long haulers. It was really great, and I guess we're all carrying around different viruses. It sounds like in the people that have the long haul syndrome, they think they're over it, but their body and immunity system is still having to endure and fight it. Seems other people clear it. It's almost like a hidden thing in some people. Like you said, Russian roulette.
Hi, this is Anonymous in Sarasota. Regarding your topic today, March 18th, the long haulers who suffer after having COVID-19, on the subject of vaccines, the disgraced ex-doctor who perpetrated the lie that vaccines cause autism, Andrew Wakefield, he should be hiding in shame, but instead, he's a darling of the Trumpuglicans and the anti-vaxxers with a supermodel girlfriend and plenty of money. Anywho, I really feel for the long haulers. What they're suffering is real, and I hope that they find plenty of help.
Hi, this is Jeff from New Tampa. Just wanted to make some comments about the show talking about COVID. And as far as wearing a mask, people who complain about that, I think that's ridiculous. I mean, you only have to wear it when you're indoors in a public situation. I don't think that's really so painful to do. And as far as social distancing goes, I want to ask, do people really enjoy being in a crowd on top of one another? I personally don't.
Well, there you have several listener comments that came in after yesterday's program. You're listening to WMNF 88.5 FM. Thanks to all those people that contributed last week during our fund drive, during our two-day fund drive last Thursday and Friday. We came up a little bit short on those days, and if you enjoy listening to WMNF and you want it to continue, the best way to do that is show your support by going to WMNF.org, and make a contribution online right now. And let us know that you're out there and that you care about programs like Democracy Now! And True Talk and all the great public affairs programs here on WMNF. Well, in Tallahassee, the Florida House is set next to consider a controversial bill on Thursday that would increase penalties on protests. Democrats and others argue the measure would violate First Amendment rights and have a chilling effect on peaceful protests. The bill is HB1. It's a priority of House Speaker Chris Sprouls, who's from Palm Harbor, and Governor Ron DeSantis. It's scheduled to be heard next Thursday on the House floor. Governor DeSantis began pushing for the legislation last year after widespread Black Lives Matter protests across the country over police treatment of African Americans. Florida largely escaped the scenes of looting and torched buildings that occurred in such cities as Minneapolis and Portland. But DeSantis contends that Florida should enact tougher penalties for violent protests to ensure the safety of citizens and tourists. As an indication of the opposition, the House Democratic Caucus voted 41-0 to take a position against the bill. Our guest today is Micah Kubik, who is executive director of the Florida ACLU. The Civil Liberties Group has come out against HB1 and its Senate companion. And I spoke with Micah earlier today. Micah Kubik, welcome to WMNF. Thank you for coming on the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, Michael, where does this House Bill 1 stand, this anti-protest bill? The governor calls it an anti-riot bill. Where does it stand right now in Tallahassee?
So this bill, which really does criminalize peaceful protests, has made its way through a few of the committees in the Florida legislature. In order for something to pass, it has to make its way through multiple committees on both sides, that is both the House and the Senate. So it hasn't made its way through all of them yet. It hasn't made its way to the floor. So we still have a little while before it goes really anywhere. The legislature is in session now. They're only in session for 60 days. Thank goodness for that. I don't know that I could last if they were there for 90. They've been in session for about 20 days now, so they've got another 40 or so days for it to make its way through all of those committees, make it to the floor for an up or down vote. And then, of course, that would determine whether it goes to the governor for his signature or not.
So I've had conflicting information coming out of Tallahassee. One is that Senator Jeff Brandis from Tampa, from St. Petersburg, rather, who chairs one of the important committees on criminal justice there in Tallahassee, kind of indicated he didn't want to hear this bill. He's a libertarian. He's not a liberal, but he's a libertarian. And he indicated he didn't want to hear the bill. But then I talked with Senator Wilton Simpson, the Senate president. He said this bill definitely is going to end up on the governor's desk. Is there any chance that a more moderate member of the Florida legislature might stop this from becoming law?
Oh, absolutely. Nothing is a foreordained conclusion here. Just because it is a priority for the governor doesn't mean that it has to be anyone else's priority. And it certainly doesn't mean that it has to be a priority for the people of Florida. I think there is a very good chance that folks in the community can make a difference on this bill by talking to legislators like Senator Brandis and others who have concerns about the bill. There is momentum growing across the state from folks from all different backgrounds and perspectives who have concerns that this bill is unconstitutional, that it chills the free speech of everyone, and that it is really dangerous. Folks from the business community, folks from the faith community, folks from the law enforcement community have all been speaking up to say that there are really serious problems with this bill. And those voices really can make a difference in persuading legislators that they should not move forward with this. It is not a foregone conclusion that it will get to the governor's desk, and it's certainly not a foregone conclusion that even if a bill that is titled HB1 makes it there, that it's the same bill as it is today. Remember, legislators can amend things all along the way. There are all sorts of things that they could do to change the bill, to make it different from what it says today. They can even change the purpose of the bill, such that even if something does wind up on Governor DeSantis's desk that has big letters that say HB1, it doesn't mean that it's this horrible, rotten, awful, no good bill that we're looking at today.
Yeah, the lower the number of a bill in Tallahassee, the higher priority it is for the leadership there in Tallahassee, right?
That's right. I mean, normally the thing that you put the number HB1 on is normally supposed to be the thing that is your number one priority, the thing that you think is most important for the state, the thing that you think would make the biggest difference in changing and improving the quality of life in the state. And that's why I think it is really such a darn shame that at a time when the coronavirus is running rampant, when there are problems with unemployment and the economy and healthcare and education, that Governor DeSantis's number one priority was this bill to criminalize peaceful protests.
All right.
That's really a shame.
The governor says, as he goes around the state and talks about this bill, and he does so frequently, he calls it the anti-riot bill. And I think the implication there, when the governor uses that term, is that we don't have any laws against rioting in the state of Florida. Is anti-riot bill a fair title for this bill?
Absolutely not. And it's utter nonsense for him to suggest that we do not already have laws on the books about rioting, about violence, about disruption, because we do. And they are frequently used by law enforcement when those events happen. That's not what this bill is about. This bill is about instead making it much harder for folks to engage in peaceful protest because they have to be afraid that they will be held responsible for the actions of other people in a way that is not about rioting, but is really about silencing people.
Last summer here in Tampa, during the protests that followed the George Floyd killing, there were thousands of people that took part in protests around Tampa. and St. Petersburg and Sarasota and Bradenton. But in Tampa, at one of the rallies, thousands of people were protesting one night, and somebody burned down a shoe store and burned down one of my favorite Asian restaurants. To this day, I don't know if we know who burned down the shoe store or the Asian restaurant. But what would happen to those thousands of people who were there at the protest in which somebody set fire to a shoe store in an Asian restaurant?
Right. So first, we should obviously condemn that behavior. We should say that is not acceptable. That is illegal. That is not a piece. That piece of it is not a peaceful protest. There were protests about racial injustice and Black Lives Matter all over the state during the summer, and the overwhelming majority of them had no disruption like that of any kind. But in those cases where there was disruption, obviously the person who set fire to those places is guilty of arson, is guilty of a crime, and if they can be found, should be charged, given a trial, convicted, sentenced. What this bill would do, though, is say that the other 10,000 people who were present at that event were guilty of a crime because of that disruption. It would allow police to arrest everyone else who was there, even though they had absolutely no role in burning the shoe store and the restaurant. Would allow them to arrest them, to charge them with disruption, charge them with a riot, potentially convict them, and sentence them to long, harsh sentences. The bill would say that those folks who, again, had nothing at all to do with the burning of those two businesses would be ineligible for bail. So they would be held in jail, completely ineligible for cash bail. Mind you, in this state, lots of folks who commit much more serious crimes, including murder, are sometimes at least potentially eligible for bail. The bill says that they would not be eligible at all in these instances, and then could be sentenced to much harsher penalties than we invoke for things like sexual assault. That would happen to the folks who attended the event. The folks who planned the event, so if someone publicized the event, said, come on down to this protest to say that we want Black Lives to Matter, that we want police accountability, even though those individuals had nothing to do with the burning of the restaurant and the shoe store, they could be charged and convicted with racketeering, the thing that we convict, you know, organized crime and the mafia with. And all of that, again, is really designed to make it so that people are less likely to show up to such an event in the first place, because they have to be worried that one random person who they have no contact with, know nothing about, will do something that would lead someone to call the event disruptive and make them to blame. And that's designed to stop people from showing up and speaking out.
All right, so let's put the shoe on the other foot. So at the Capitol insurrection on January 6th, thousands of people invaded the Capitol. There was hand-to-hand combat. Some officers died. But then there were thousands of people who didn't invade the Capitol. They were protesting the election results, but they didn't take part in the insurrection. So would those folks that stood outside the Capitol that didn't take part in the insurrection, under this law, if it were in place in Washington, D.C., all those thousands of others that stood outside, they would also be charged with a third-degree felony?
Under the bill, that's absolutely what should happen. Or what could happen. I think it's very telling, though, that so far the governor, when asked when some folks have tried to press him on this issue, hasn't been willing to say whether Donald Trump himself would be eligible to be charged with a crime under this bill.
Oh, you've asked him that question.
Well, I've asked other people to ask him that question, and so far we've gotten no answer. But I think it's very telling that anytime someone tries to bring up January 6th, he changes the subject. He says the bill is necessary because of the events there, but doesn't want to go into any other detail. And I think if you're not willing to say, leave the merits of the bill aside for the moment, if you're not willing to say that the situation is analogous and that Donald Trump would be eligible at least to be charged with a crime under this bill, then that tells us everything we need to know. It tells us that it's not actually about law and order. It's not actually about stopping rioting or about violence. It's really about silencing the folks who you don't want to speak. And we know that because the governor actually proposed this bill back in September, long before the events of the Capitol. And he was very clear at that time that it was because he did not like the Black Lives Matter and racial justice protests that were taking place.
Well, we're talking about the anti-protest bill, or as the governor calls it, the anti-riot bill, HB1, and the Senate companion is SB 484. It's currently being considered in Tallahassee, and our guest is Micah Kubik, who is executive director of the Florida ACLU, and this is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. What would it do to those folks that want to tear down Confederate statues?
Yeah, so it's really remarkable that in a bill that's supposedly about law and order and supposedly, you know, is dressed up as about those things, the bill imposes harsh penalties for those folks who do anything to Confederate memorials. I'm not really sure what that has to do with the broader issue here. I think it's, again, evidence that the bill is not about maintaining order or stopping disruption, but is instead about penalizing folks who disagree with the political views of the governor and the proponents. Otherwise, I'm not really sure why Confederate memorials make their way into this thing at all.
It raises the question, why would one memorial to a cause be different than any other memorial to World War II or to civil rights leaders or to, you know, famous musicians or any other statue in the state? Why would the Confederate statues get the special protection and the others not?
Yeah, right. I think it's very clear that the bill is motivated by disagreement with the political views that were expressed over the summer. And it's certainly the governor's right and the proponent's right to disagree with the folks who were speaking out. I happen to agree with the Black Lives Matter movement. But in a democracy, everyone gets to say their piece. We don't say that you aren't allowed to say your piece. We don't penalize people for their political views. Instead, we speak out and then we vote, and the majority is supposed to win. But this entire bill is really an attack on that principle of democracy and an attack on being able to speak out at all. And that's what makes it really not only unconstitutional, but just a disgrace.
What would this bill do to people who are in cars who try to run over protesters who are walking down the street?
Yeah. In a bill that is full of horrible, rotten, no good things, I think the thing that is actually the most disturbing is this provision that you're talking about here, which is that the bill says that if you are a passing motorist, in your car and you see a protest that causes you to be frightened, to be fearful, you have the ability to run over a protester with your car, kill that individual, and then not be held liable for having done so. Essentially grants additional immunity. Expand sort of a version of the stand your ground defense. Not exactly the same, but in theory, sort of the same as the stand your ground defense that we have in Florida. But essentially gives folks greater impunity to run over folks with their car if they claim that they feel threatened or frightened. We've already seen all over the country that there are, in fact, motorists who have gone out of their way to run over protesters. That was something that happened in Charlottesville. It's something that's happened in Portland and elsewhere. And the fact that we would, through this bill, be sanctioning that, be saying that that is okay, that it's acceptable behavior, is really disturbing, shocking, and disgraceful.
Well, Micah Kubik is executive director of the Florida ACLU, and we're talking about the bill that would crack down on protests here in Florida that's making its way through the legislature in Tallahassee. So, Micah, in Tallahassee, if somebody's opposed to this and the bill comes up for a committee hearing, what's it like up there in Tallahassee? How much freedom do people have to speak out against the bill?
It's certainly much more difficult than it has been in previous years. The legislature has responded to the pandemic by really shutting down in many respects. It's very hard to testify in person. If you do testify in person, you're usually limited to 1 minute now. It's more difficult to reach legislators in their offices, in the hallways, by phone than it ever has been before. And all of that is a response to the pandemic. On the one hand, we can feel a little bit gratified that the legislature is taking public health somewhat seriously with respect to itself. I find it very curious that these precautions that the legislature insists are necessary to protect public health for itself are not ones that it's willing to extend around the state in other ways. There has been no similar mandate statewide. They certainly have not supported those sorts of expansive public health precautions as a matter of policy for anyone else, but they do for themselves. And I think we should note that Tallahassee was already a somewhat removed place. It was already a place where it was very difficult for everyday people to make their voices heard. It was already the case that legislators frequently simply disregarded the will of the people, as they have when they have disregarded ballot initiatives that the majority of Floridians have passed. So we shouldn't pretend like it is a completely, totally different place, but there's no doubt that the response to the pandemic has been to make it harder for everyday people to make their voices heard and to sort of inoculate themselves from public scrutiny and criticism.
Is it just liberals and progressives who are complaining about these bills?
Oh, goodness, no. Goodness, no. I think although the primary supporter of the bill, Governor DeSantis, does seem to be motivated by a political ideology here, I think there are lots of folks who recognize that the bill can be used against just about any group, in part because it's so vague. The definition of what constitutes a riot or what constitutes a disruption at an event is so vague that it could be turned on just about anyone. And so folks who support or who oppose reproductive freedom, for example, so anti-abortion protesters could very well have this turned against them. Faith groups could have it turned against them. Even folks who are not engaging in political protests, but simply having a large group gathering where something goes wrong and one person engages in illegal behavior. The entire event could be treated as a riot and punished in this way. So I think there are folks from the business community, from the faith community, from all political ideologies who are expressing grave concerns. And I think there are folks from law enforcement who also recognize that this is a really broad, vague, and difficult bill that perhaps empowers them too much.
So last summer, millions of people took part in peaceful protests. There was some violence last summer. There were many arrests last summer. Has the state legislature done anything to look at police reform to see if we need some sort of response to the BLM movement and the number of killings around the country of black people?
So sadly, no. It is really unfortunate. It is really terrible that the primary response to the events of the summer and to the events of the last 250 years, to be clear, when it comes to racial justice in America, that the Florida legislature's primary response to those events has been to make it more difficult for people to speak out. It has not been to address the underlying causes that led people to speak out. So although there have been dozens of bills filed in the legislature to bring greater accountability, to reduce police violence, to address issues of racial injustice, the legislature has not taken up any of those. I think not a single one of them, if I'm right, has made its way to a committee hearing. They've certainly been filed, but received no action. And instead, the one that has received action has been the one that seeks to ignore that reality and seeks to make it worse, seeks to make racial injustice worse rather than better. And that is really terrible.
Mike, if this bill passes and let's say that folks are in a large crowd and one member of that crowd commits a felony during a protest and they're all subject to felony charges under this law. That would seem to be unconstitutional at the highest order, because your intent, if you're out there peacefully protesting, whether you're an anti-abortion activist or you're a BLM activist, your intent when you go out to these things is to peacefully protest. You know, only a small fringe group takes part in violence during these protests. It would seem like, on the face of it, unconstitutional. So do you have hope that the higher courts would say to Florida, look, you're wrong, you can't do this?
Yeah, I think the bill is brazenly, wantonly unconstitutional on its face. I think just about every constitutional scholar and lawyer who's looked at it has said the same thing, including the leading constitutional scholar in the entire country, Erwin Chemerinsky, who's the dean of the law school out at UCLA, a highly respected constitutional scholar across the political spectrum, Republicans, Democrats, conservatives, liberals alike. Think that Dean Chemerinsky is the go-to person. He looked at the bill. He provided testimony to the committee saying that this was just flagrantly violating the First Amendment. And so I do have hope, first of all, that the legislature will see reason and will not go through with the bill. But if they do, then I do have a great deal of hope and confidence that the courts will strike it down as violating our First Amendment rights, as violating the right of free expression, and of undermining the spirit of democracy itself.
Micah, what's next for this bill? What's your best advice for people who are concerned about this?
Folks should be in touch with their member of the state legislature, their state senator, their state representative. The bill still has a way to go, so it is not something that's going to pass tomorrow. We still have time to be in touch with legislators, to let them know that this is not something that Floridians support. And so regardless of who their state legislator is, whether it's someone that they think normally agrees with them or disagrees with them on the issues, folks need to speak up about this one, to be in touch with their legislator, whether that's sending them an email, calling their office, seeing them in person when they're back in the district. More than anything, folks really need to be heard on this, so that it does not pass in the dead of night, but rather that folks know, legislators know, that there is a strong movement against this bill. That's what can slow it down. That's what can change it. That's what can stop it, is the power of people.
Mikey, is there anything else that you'd like to point out about this bill before we go?
No, I think we covered it well. It is really a shocking, nasty piece of business, and it is clearly tied to a bigger attack on democracy and the principles of democracy. That's something that we're going to have to watch out for through the rest of the session and in future sessions, too, because I don't think that this bill is going to be the last time that we see an assault on the fundamental principles of democracy. That's terrifying, but also something that we have to be vigilant about and where we can prevail.
And you've got a fact sheet on your website that people can look at to see your objections to HB1.
That's right. We have a very, very detailed multi-page analysis of the bill. Goes point by point through it. We also have other resources on our website for folks who want to be in touch with their legislators to make it a little easier for them to do that. And all of that is at aclufl.org.
Micah Kubik, thanks for coming on WMNF.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
That's Micah Kubik, who is the executive director of the Florida ACLU. You can find him at aclufl.org. Protests. Democrats and others, including, as you heard, the ACLU, argued the measure would violate First Amendment rights and have a chilling effect on peaceful protests. The bill, HB1, is a priority of House Speaker Chris Sprouls of Palm Harbor and Governor Ron DeSantis. And again, it's going to be debated next Thursday on the House floor. If you want to comment about what you've heard so far, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. Also, Our emails are working, so you can send your email to dj@wmnf.org. Let's take a few phone calls. There's a bunch going on in the news. I want to tell you about that in a moment. But let's go to Richard in Tampa, who's calling in. Richard, what would you like to say?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Ron. I just wanted to say that I think this has Nazi and Gestapo tactics written all over it. And I think if this does pass, it could expand into other ways to where more power would be given to the governor and the state government. So, I mean, anything that takes away our constitutional rights, with this, they're always trying to take our rights away, slowly but surely whittling them away. Everybody should stand up for that. Get out and protest against this.
Well, maybe they'll arrest you, Richard.
I'm not afraid of getting arrested, Ron. I mean,
all right.
What kind of? I don't live in fear of getting arrested and saying and speaking.
No, it was just a joke. Never mind. It was just a joke.
But yeah. I mean, we can't be submissive to fear. We can't be intimidated by fear. I mean, fear tactics and those type of tactics were used back in World War II, which, you know, the Nazis were trying to take control of the world. So I mean, slowly but surely, this governor thinks that, you know, high and mighty, which I can't even believe we are a Republican state, the state of Florida. I mean, one day we are going to transform into a Democratic state. But this guy, you know, he's just an extension of the guy that we kicked out of office, our ex-president. So, I mean, he thinks he's got major powers and he's going to keep exercising his powers. And we need to stop him.
Okay. Richard, thanks a lot. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM, and I'm Rob Lurie. And if you want to comment about HB1, the anti-protest bill, or as the governor calls it, the anti-riot bill, you can call us at that number, or you can email us here in the studio, the address dj@wmnf.org. Marinella writes that the EBS test took over when the guy from the ACLU was giving his web address. Please repeat. Those pesky EBS tests, they always happen at the wrong time. The ACLU address in Florida is aclufl.org. Let's go to John in Port Richey. John, what would you like to comment about?
Hey, thanks for the show, Rob. Didn't we pass a fair district amendment a while back in the state of Florida?
We did.
Okay. So I'm not quite sure how that really works, but I'm amazed that a lot of these districts still seem to be gerrymandered to favor Republicans. So, I mean, is it really working or how does it work? I don't know.
Well, what happens is that whoever is in control in the legislature every 10 years gets to redraw districts. Now, we do have an amendment to the state constitution that says that we have two amendments. So one that says for state districts, state house and senate districts, and the other says for congressional districts that we got to keep politics out of drawing districts. But there's always politics involved. And given the fact that the Republicans have controlled the last two redistricting cycles and they're going to control this one too, it can be challenged in the courts, but if the courts don't lean in your direction, if they lean in the other direction, then you end up with unfair districts.
So basically, the amendment just says it has to be drawn in a fair way, whatever that means, right?
Yeah, I'll pull up the language in a second. All right, language is easy to find.
Here's my thought. I'm not at a computer right now, sorry. Here's my thought is, why don't we make it so that each district reflects the registration party with the state? There's four major registrated parties or four parties that the state recognizes: Republicans, Democrats, Independents, and non-party. So each district, you look at, okay, what is the percentage of voters in the state and what percentage are registered Republicans, registered Democrats, and so forth. And you would make each district that representative. To me, that would be the fairest way to do a district.
Yeah, but you'd have to get some sort of measure passed statewide that would impose that. There is an effort to stop gerrymandering in the in Congress. Their election bill would stop gerrymandering statewide or nationwide.
Well, rather. If we already have an amendment that says they're supposed to be fair, why couldn't we just implement that as a metric to prove that they're fair?
Well, that's John.
Right.
I don't know how to say this politely, but we've covered this extensively. The newspapers have covered it extensively.
Yeah. And it's politics. And they're still gerrymandering.
They're still gerrymandering, exactly. And when you find a court that's favorable, you can get your districts through. So go ahead.
So what you're saying is basically we have to pass another constitutional amendment to say these are the metrics you need to put into place. And then I'm sure the Republican legislators will find some way of getting around that because they won't like it. So it's like you're stuck between a rock and a hard place sometimes, Rob. Thanks.
All right, John, thanks a lot. I mean, John's right. I mean, the districts are not fairly drawn. You've got more Democrats packed into their districts. You've got fewer Republicans, but still a majority packed into their districts. What they tend to do is they pack. I'll just give you a made-up number, but this is pretty close to being true. If you have a Democratic district, it's going to have 60, 70, 80% Democrats in it. That's the way they draw it. But if you have a Republican district, you're going to draw it with 54, 55% Republicans. So what you've done is you've rounded up all the Democrats and put them in fewer districts, and you've given Republicans a shot at winning the broader number of districts. That's the way gerrymandering works here in the state of Florida. It still goes on, and we have covered it over and over and over again. And there's some really good newspaper reporting about this, and I would urge John and everybody else to closely read the newspaper coverage. In 2010, I'll just read from the Ballotpedia. In 2010, we passed two fair district amendments, and I'll just read the mission. Under their mission, Fair Districts Now states they will provide support to Floridians who want to actively participate in the effort to be sure that Florida districts are drawn in 2012 to benefit the people and not the politicians. Educating the public about the redistricting process and how citizens can participate is a primary goal, along with using every available, including the courts if necessary, to ensure that politicians follow the letter and spirit of the Fair District Amendments when they draw the district lines. So you can find more at ballotpedia.org about the Fair District Amendments here in Florida that were passed by the voters in 2010. They're not perfect. They helped a little bit to try to make the districts more fair, but they're not perfect, and they didn't solve the problem. Let's go to a Varnell in Bradenton. Varnell, you're on M&F. Thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Well, first of all, it's Darnell.
Okay, Darnell, thank you. It says V here, but anyway, Darnell, what would you like to say?
You and your callers and your guests are the biggest bunch of misinformed creeps, clowns, and idiots I've ever heard in my life. Do you really take what you say seriously, or is this an act?
Darnell, give us an example.
People are laughing at you.
Yeah, give us an example.
Peaceful protest? Are you kidding me?
Well, give us an example.
When's the last time you saw a peaceful protest? Ask some of those old people that were dining outside in St. Pete and got smashed in the face and their tables taken away. Is that peaceful protest?
Wait a minute. Darnell, just get the story straight. There were two people at along Beach Drive in St. Petersburg, and they were giving their finger to the protesters. And so one of the protesters sat down, but nobody got smashed. So let's just be real about it. And most of the folks who were protesting during the BLM movement last summer in St. Petersburg on Beach Drive, they were non-confrontational and peaceful. And you had somebody flip the finger at somebody else and things got tense. But that's no buildings got burned down on Beach Drive. So anyway, just be real about that. Darnell, just be real about that. But let's move on. What would you like to say?
Do you really take what you say seriously?
Absolutely. I take what I say to the bank. You can take what I say to the bank.
You know, I mean, representatives of your party are Danny and...
It's not my party. I'm not representing a party here. I'm just saying I'm representing peace and equality and social justice. So if you've got something that you think that I said wrong, or if a caller said wrong, just tell us what they said wrong.
Because he's a white guy.
Now, who's a white guy?
Anybody is. You make them try.
What do you, Darnell, you're not making any sense. If we said something wrong, if we said something that's untrue, then just tell us what it was.
You guys are funnier than Seinfeld and the Three Stooges mixed together, man.
All right. Well, Darnell, thanks a lot. I guess you don't have a point to make. You just want a name call, but do you have a point that you'd like to make, or do you want to just name call? You want a name call, or you want to make a point?
My point is made. You guys are a bunch of clowns, and you're uninformed.
Wow. Well, Darnell, if you have a fact that needs to be said, make it. I'll give you a few seconds. Make a fact.
Tell us. Oregon.
You know, make a fact. Just tell us a fact that needs to be said.
There's my point right there. If you shut up and let me finish.
Well, if you, I'm trying to be polite. I just want you to make a fact. Tell us a fact that we got wrong in the last half hour.
Well, first of all, you hate DeSantis because he's a Republican.
We didn't bring up hate of DeSantis. We brought up that DeSantis wants to crack down on protests, even though we have existing laws that cover protests. So we've got protests. We've got laws that cover assault. We've got laws that cover burning down buildings. We've got laws that cover battery. I mean, just you name it. We've got laws that cover all that stuff. So hate of DeSantis didn't come up. But tell us what we got wrong.
Rob, you're not letting me talk.
Well, no, Darnell, I'm letting you talk. But tell us what you got wrong. What we got wrong, rather. I'm sorry.
You say all protests are peaceful? Well, you know what?
No, I said that the vast, if you listen back to the interview and if you take notes, I said that the vast majority of protesters for the BLM movement were peaceful. And Darnell, I don't think you've got any facts to back you up, so I'm just going to move on. But thank you very much for your call. Great to hear from you. Let's go to Susan in St. Petersburg. Hi, Susan. You're on MNF.
Hello there.
Hi, Susan.
Yes,
what would you like to say?
I'm glad I got in too. That guy was a comedian. I was kind of
All he had was name calling, and I tried to give him a chance to say, okay, well, give us a fact.
I know, and it was funny. Yeah, but this is my thought on the bill, you know, about the peaceful protest. I think this is just a retaliation of the insurgents that we had. And it sounds, I'm wondering if any other states have thought of doing this also. Just ours? Or does it mean?
You know, that's a good question. I'm pretty sure there are similar measures being proposed in other states, but I don't have the details in front of me, and I'm not going to speak. Unless I have the facts, I'm not going to say.
Exactly. It's just a thought, you know. But it just looks like it's kind of like a conspiracy theory of certain states that might introduce it. And that's all I had to say. And it's a really good show. And it's got a lot to get control of.
All right, Susan, thanks a lot.
Thank you
for that.
Thank you very much.
All right, great.
Bye-bye.
Great to hear from you. Well, we've got an open line, and if you want to call, the number to call is 813-239-9663. And also, if you want to email, you can email us here in the studio. The address is dj@wmnf.org. John and Lutz writes, Governor DeSantis wants you to be able to drive your car, truck into a crowd of Trump supporters and claim you felt threatened by them. Why would DeSantis want to authorize a death sentence for Trump supporters, writes John in Lutz. And then John in Sarasota writes, remember that the Republican legislators fought the last redistricting in the courts, knowing that their plan was illegal, spending millions in tax dollars, writes John in Sarasota. Well, there's some other issues in the news I want to tell you about, but we can continue to talk about the governor's efforts to increase penalties on protesters here in the state if you want. And if you want to comment about any of the callers, you can also do that. Number to call, 813-239-9663. A former South Florida state Republican senator has been charged with three criminal counts involving a sham candidate intended to siphon votes away from a Democratic incumbent. An arrest warrant says that the former state senator, Frank Artiles, he's from Miami, gave more than $44,000 to a fake candidate in the 2020 election. That candidate, Alex Rodriguez, has the same last name as the then-Democratic incumbent, Jose Javier Rodriguez. Alex Rodriguez, no relation to the ballplayer, ran as an independent in a three-way state Senate race, which was won by the Republican, Eliana Garcia, and she won by just 32 votes. She's not implicated in the scheme. The fake candidate, Alex Rodriguez, was also charged yesterday with election law violations. So that's a big story, and I'm sure we're going to hear more about that in the days to come. 813-239-9663. Let's go to, we're going to go to Mark, and Mark is, his name is being typed in. Let's go to Mark. Mark, where are you? Hey, Mark.
Hello.
Oh, Mark in Lakeland. Okay. Mark, what would you like to say?
What I would like to say is all of this hatred going on in our country right now goes back to one person, and it's Donald Trump. And the and he's led the Republican Party. I cannot believe that these people continue to follow that hatred and the name calling. Okay, he says something, they go to work. Okay, and it's not going to stop if Trump comes back in. I can't believe they don't turn around and ban him from ever running again. Okay, but if you ever notice something about the Republican Party, no, let me rephrase that: the Trumpies. They turn around, and no matter what happens, the man is not held responsible for his actions or his words.
Well, he may be held responsible for his actions because now there's lawsuits over the Capitol insurrection. So
But you ever notice something about Donald Trump? Okay, and if anybody, if these Republicans would turn around. And by the way, I used to be a Republican, okay? But I have no use for this. It's not about Republicans and Democrats. It's about good people and bad people, okay? And Donald Trump, they say there's over 2,000 pending lawsuits going on right now. He doesn't pay them. He just outweights you, okay, until you run out of money, and then he gets away with it again.
Yeah, that seems to be his modus operandi. We'll see. I mean, because now that he's out of office, it's easier to bring those law those legal actions against the former president. So he may have survived when he was president, but
if you look at yesterday's vote, okay, 9 Republicans supported it. Okay, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have their work cut out for them because they have a Senate that doesn't want to do anything, okay?
Yeah. Mark, thanks a lot. Thank you for your views. Good to hear from you. All right, I'm glad you were able to get through. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Michael in Clearwater. Hi, Michael. You're on WMNF.
Hi, yes. The caller has said that the situation was a counter to the insurrection, and it was a conspiracy theory that the states got together and decided to crack down on protesters to counter the insurrection. I guess that she was referring to the states were upset that the feds had cracked down on the insurrection, with the hundreds of people had stolen all the secret government information, sold it to the Russians, they told us.
Michael, you kind of lost me, so I'm going to move on. But Michael, thanks a lot. Thanks for the call. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Andy in Dunedin. Andy, you're on. What would you like to say?
Rob, happy Friday. The Senator and Reverend Raphael Warner gave a speech yesterday that NPR played this morning, and if your listeners didn't get a chance to hear it.
It was on Democracy Now! This morning. Democracy Now! Played the whole speech this morning around 9:30, yeah?
Yeah, just, I mean, it gave me goosebumps. An incredible speech. He kind of reminded me of a cross between Martin Luther King Jr. and former President Barack Obama. Just incredible speech. He got a standing ovation, and Anybody who didn't get a chance to hear, please go back and listen to it. It was good listening.
All right, thanks, Andy. Thanks a lot. Yeah, the new U.S. Senator from Georgia, Reverend Warnock, gave a speech about voting rights, and it was very impassioned and very good. Simon writes in to say, there has not been one individual criminal charged with insurrection, writes Simon. Simon, thank you for that. That may be true. Bob in Largo writes, did anyone in the Tampa Bay area receive their $1,400 stimulus check yet, writes Bob in Largo. Well, if you received your $400 in stimulus money, let me know and I'll tell Bob. I'll use the radio to do it, too. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Wade in Clearwater. Hi, Wade. You're on M&F.
Yes. I appreciate your show. I'm an ex-police officer from Clearwater, 1965. I was the first black police officer to graduate from the academy. And from that point until then, till now, I also got drafted in 1969. All the people that have a problem with the racist things that we are experiencing in this country, I think everybody needs to have gone and serve some branch of the military so they can have a definite, affirmative right to protest anyone in this country. I served my country for all I took the oath to protect this country with my life, and I still would do that, but not for idiots that have a problem with me, just because of my skin color, of my ethnicity, or whatever. I just feel that these kind of people need to be put in jail, and, black or white, when you go against the principles of what this country was founded for, and I think more people need to realize that.
And Wade, who's going against the principles of what the country was founded for?
Pardon?
Who are you talking about? Who's going against the principles of what the country was founded for?
I guess the people that marched on the Capitol, for instance, and people that want to insist that minorities and Black Lives Matter and whatever else, don't matter. We just shit up and let idiots do anything they feel that they have a right to do, which they have no right to do that.
Yeah, so wait, a few dozen of those folks who stormed the Capitol have been arrested. Thousands of BLM protesters were arrested last summer around the country. Do you think that the government is being too lenient on the people that stormed the Capitol?
No, I think the government is reflective of the impartiality that basically we need to get rid of. Everybody needs to serve something to have a right to protest anything, for as I'm concerned. If you don't step up to the plate and make sure that this country stays intact with the principles that were given to make this country a democracy in the first place, you have no right to, in my opinion, no voice to say anything derogatory about anybody, because this land was taken from not Americans at that time. It was taken from the indigenous American Indians. And they, more than anybody, should have the final say if we go back to the principles of democracy.
That would be interesting. Wade, thanks a lot. Thank you for that. I'll have to look up your history, too. Thank you for telling us about it. Kay writes this, people are not laughing at this show. It's highly regarded as being truth to the present day, and the fact the show can be fact-checked, writes Kay. Kay, thank you for that support. Let's go to Raphael in Tampa. Raphael, you're on M&F. What would you like to say?
Yeah, the principal of the United States was built.
No, this is a guy who is using a different voice and calls back all the time. We're not going to put him on the air twice. We had one call from him using a different name, Michael from Clearwater. Thank you very much. His name is Levi, and he lives in Polk County, but he puts on a different name and tries to get on the air a lot. Lori writes, I got my stimulus money directly deposited in my account the day after the bill was signed. Lori doesn't say where she is, but she says, yes, I did get my stimulus money. Alan in Mulberry says he got his stimulus money. Mama T in Sarasota says the stimulus money was pending on Monday and deposited on Wednesday. So a lot of people answering whether or not they got the stimulus money. Well, Janelle Irwin is coming up in the next hour on the Midpoint program. Thanks a lot for listening. This is WMNF in Tampa. Frank Knox and Cindy Philpott are working behind the scenes to make this show go. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us on the comment line, 813-238-8001, extension 115. I'll play your comments back on Monday. This is WMNF in Tampa.